This is the Future of IP Protection podcast, brought to you by MorphVision. This show is dedicated to arming companies with the skills, know-how, and technology they will need to future-proof their IP protection strategy for the years ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Future of IP Protection podcast. I'm Brandi Spence, head of marketing with MorphVision. Today, we are thrilled to have Maura Reagan, president of Licensing International, with us. Maura brings over 20 years of licensing and brand management experience to her role at this leading prominent industry organization, and we're excited to speak with her today. Welcome to the show, Maura.
Thanks, Brandi. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to sit down and talk to you.
I know we've been trying to make this happen for a little bit, and I'm excited that we finally did. So let's dive in and have you start by telling us a little bit more about your background for those that don't know and your role at Licensing International over the past 6 years.
Awesome. Thank you. So I'm Maura Reagan and I'm president of Licensing International. I came into this role really as a board member, first and foremost, to the association. I was always on the side as a licensor in the industry. So I have many years in the industry. I was at Sesame Workshop, the home of Sesame Street, for many years running their global consumer products and media distribution business. And before that, I was at places like MTV, Scholastic, Jim Henson, where I got my start in licensing. And I really just grew up in the industry on the side of the licensor part of the business, but working intimately over the years with retailers, with licensees, and on a global basis. So really came to understand the importance, certainly, of IP protection and brand management from the ground up. And then as a board member, was really involved with the expansion of the association as licensing was growing up, sort of being along for that ride as well. And then the team here asked me to step in and take a leadership role as staff, and I couldn't say no. So here I am.
And here you are. And I'm sure you've seen a lot over the past few years. And one of the things I think right now that's really hot is just technology and its role right now and how it's rapidly transforming our world, especially in the realm of IP. With some of the new technologies such as AI and deep fakes that are emerging, in your view, how are these technologies playing a role right now in the current IP landscape for licensing brands?
I think technology is a tool, and it's a tool that can be used to help us as well as to challenge us or hinder us. So there's always ways. And it's you know, the one constant in our lives is that it's not going away. And I think it's really how we adapt and make use of technology. And so I think to see the evolution over even the past 5 years of where it's gotten to where we are in our industry is incredibly exciting, but also very, very challenging. But I think looking first at the positive to really understand how technology particularly is supporting and helping brand management, brand ownership, IP ownership, all of that is really being aided and supported by technology. Now, on the flip side, certainly, as we've all been hearing much talk about everything from ChatGPT, deepfakes, whether it's voice activation or actual products, things like that, yes, absolutely. Technology is a part of that as well and is forcing us to really look very deeply at how we can, again, combat that, but using technology. So technology is here to stay. It's a tool. It can be used for good as well as for bad. But again, it's a tool and it's not going away.
No, it's most definitely not. Building a bit on that topic from your experience, what would you say are some of the most pressing IP protection challenges that licensors are facing today? And maybe that's, you know, from a technology standpoint, but maybe it's beyond that, you know, other types of challenges that you're seeing.
Well, I think a few things have happened. And I think from a brand management and brand ownership perspective, what I've really seen evolve over the years is back in the days when I first started out from a brand ownership or management perspective, it was really sort of this top-down approach. From brand management, it's just your IP was your IP. You registered it. Of course, we all know about registering all of our IPs and all of that. But it was really almost, I'm saying, like it was a one-way conversation with your consumer so that there was a dictate of how you brought to life your brand, your IP. Today, what we're seeing is that it's really a dialogue with the consumer. And so with that comes a little bit of stretching and a little bit of not devolution in our use of our IP, but really there's just a little bit, it's not exactly how it always was scripted. And so with that, as brand owners and management of brands, you've really got to be on top of how your brand is being used and how you want it to be used. And again, in constant dialogue and communication with your consumer, understanding your consumer to know where they really want to take your brand, but always from your perspective to understand where you want to go with it. So it's really, you've got to really stay on your toes, even more than ever, I'd say.
For sure. Having, I guess, your guardrails. We had talked a little bit ahead of this as well. And we had talked about, you mentioned, you know, knowing your brand and knowing your consumers. Unwittingly, you always have some consumers that are fans, that are loyal fans, that want to honor your brand and have their own take on things. And I think you had given us a great example. I'd love to hear a little bit more about, for example, the Ted Lasso biscuit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about that one.
Well, I think at the end of the day, we're all consumers in one way, shape, or form. And we're all interacting, consuming brands from the time we get up to the time we go to sleep at night. Everything is really driven by a brand experience. You know, frankly, if the product isn't a branded product, it's really more of a commodity. And so it's really a big part of how we live our lives. And I think as brand owners, we really understand that there is much love and appreciation oftentimes for brands. When it crosses over and it becomes an infringement, is often tied to how it's being used, if it's being used inappropriately, if it's not within the sort of, I don't want to say guardrails per se, but the dictates of how you want your brand to be expressed. And the example that you mentioned, we had talked about, was this wonderful supermarket chain had unwittingly, you know, created an infringement with the Ted Lasso, because anyone who's familiar with Ted Lasso knows that the biscuits, the cookies, they're a big part of the show early on. And there's a real emotional connection to that product. So the supermarket chain created their version of these Ted Lasso biscuits, these shortbread biscuits, and they quickly learned that they were in fact infringing on the Ted Lasso name. But those are the kinds of things that we certainly, you can see it that way. You can also see, you know, there are t-shirts being made and sold. And when it starts to sort of cross over is when it becomes scaled and when it becomes a business that someone's running. And that, I think, is really oftentimes where things cross the line. Again, brand owners, we understand, we appreciate our fans, our consumers. We love them. We need them. It's when it goes from you're making a t-shirt because you absolutely love this particular brand and you're a fan, to then you start to, you know, set up business in your garage or your basement and you've really scaled it in such a way that it is absolutely infringing on the rights of the brand owner who's invested. And that's what it comes down to. It's not just about it's mine and I don't want you to have it. It's really an acknowledgement of the level of investment that goes into creating, developing, nurturing, maintaining a brand and what that investment is, and how if you are infringing it, you're really not respecting someone else's creation. And that's really, I think, what we try and work with folks who don't quite understand why you can't just go out and do what you want to do because you love that particular brand. It's because there's a significant investment that's gone into creating that brand.
Yeah, for sure. That's a really good perspective. Now, on the people side, what guidance would you offer to brands to improve their internal collaboration for more effective brand protection?
I think that what it really comes down to is everyone has to be all in this together. And gone are the days where organizations were, you know, in different lanes, because everything has to be in sync. And so the better organized you are internally at your organization, so that your sales team and your product development team and your legal team and your finance team are aligned on the goals of the organization and what you want to do with your brand, the better go-to-market strategy you have, and also the better equipped you are to combat any kind of infringements or counterfeit activity when you are all in sync, so that you all know and there's transparency internally about the products that you're doing. Because again, as I started off talking about, the days where something was a very direct iteration of that brand and that logo was just used explicitly the way it was, those days, I don't say they're gone forever, but there's a lot more flexibility and stretch to how brands are using their IP. So unless all the stakeholders within the organization understand, there may be confusion about what is actually appropriate and proper use of the brand in different iterations.
Yeah, obviously there needs to be a lot of communication there across those divisions. Let's shift to policy for a second. While you guys are not a lobbying group, Licensing International does help shape regulations around brand protection. Can you discuss some of your latest initiatives in this area?
Sure. And the reason why, you know, we're not, as a trade associations oftentimes are lobbying organizations. So they have a government relations team and they're on the Hill and they're really advocating for their lines of business. And so if you're the toy association is a good example, the footwear association, because they're very discreet, singular lines of business. Licensing, of course, covers multiple verticals, as we say. So it's, we cover everything from toys to entertainment. And then within that, we do everything from, you know, as well, apparel, footwear, all of that. So we answer to a lot of masters. And from a, you know, government relations and lobbying effort, it's really impossible to cover that many verticals because there's oftentimes just competing agendas. So, but what we do is we work and align ourselves with those organizations, those associations who are singular. So whether it's the Footwear Association, the Accessories Council, or the Toy Association, we will, in fact, if there's something that's coming up, we will, of course, lend our name, lend our weight. We will sign if it's necessary to, you know, have an amicus brief or something that is in support of that. We're not, again, we're not a lobbying group, but we can have counsel render certain opinions that would support the efforts of other organizations who are, in fact, lobbying. And we do work with different organizations on that. We'll research to make sure that our position is appropriate and in line with the goals of our membership.
Yeah. And related to that, can you talk about any recent anti-counterfeiting collaborations that you've done to help facilitate some of the...
Absolutely.
Yeah, to protect brand owners, right? So
happy to, because this is, you know, anti-counterfeiting is so important and protection of rights, of IP rights, is foundational to the business of our business, ultimately. And for a number of reasons, obviously, there's a revenue that's lost because of counterfeiting and not just revenue to the IP owners or the manufacturers of that particular product. It's also from governments, taxes, and things like that. So there's a lot of revenue that gets lost. But even more important is that so much of these bad actors are involved in really, really nefarious things like human trafficking, like drug trade. Those are the kinds of things that are just absolutely horrible, horrible. And so on so many fronts, we are very committed to really creating an environment and atmosphere and a level of understanding on the importance of anti-counterfeiting. And it's not just about sort of fun fakes that, you know, or dupes, and you can find out these kinds of things that are just like a Chanel slip-on shoe, for example, and it's kind of right. Fun because it's a third of the price. Because once you really understand what goes into that, creating that dupe, and there's oftentimes there's child labor involved, all those kinds of things are just really bad. And so what we do is we partnered with a number of organizations, and we, you know, we're very proud of our relationship with Amazon, who has really helped us on this front as well. And we've created a series of programs that are focused on educating and informing the industry specifically and the broader business community around the efforts that are being done on a commercial level as well as a consumer level to counteract counterfeiting. And that's something that we are particularly proud of because as we see, and we started the conversation around technology, as we see technology evolving and it's become so, so sophisticated, we have to learn to be that much more nimble and on top of these kinds of counterfeiting activities in order to just be that much faster and smarter and better than those bad actors.
Right, of course. And Amazon, of course, is like the 800-pound gorilla of e-commerce at this time, right? And they've done such a good job, I think, in the past few years of really curtailing and putting in programs to handle this issue. So it's great to see you guys collaborating with them. As a quick follow-up, are there any works with any other types of marketplaces, so to speak, especially with e-social sell, or what do you call it, social commerce going on right now, TikTok shop, that kind of thing?
We also work with Alibaba. So that's, you know, looking at the big ones. And then, of course, all the e-commerce sites of all the major retailers. So we spend a lot of time on that as well. And I think that, you know, realistically, and I know our friends at both Alibaba and Amazon would agree, or whether you're Redbubble or Etsy or whomever, you know, it's near impossible. And I think the more that we're in discussion directly with these marketplaces to understand the pain points and from the brand and rights owners and licensees and manufacturers perspective to really understand what needs to get done and how vigilant people need to be, I think the more, again, it goes back to communication, the more that we have the opportunity to take down these bad actors. But unfortunately, I don't think realistically it's ever going to go away 100%. But I can say with certainty that if we don't address it, it will only get that much worse.
Absolutely. It's been around for counterfeiting for like, I don't know, thousands of years, right? So you're right. It's probably not ever going to go anywhere, but we need to stay ahead for sure. Now, let's look at the crystal ball and think ahead 5 years from now. How do you envision the future of IP protection to look like? And how might the role of Licensing International evolve?
I think what's really exciting is to see so many companies just really understanding the value of brands and brand protection, mm-hmm. and not to be sort of, you know, pulling back and sort of staying in a corner around brands, but understanding that, you know, brands ultimately are about an emotional connection that a consumer has. And so how do we expand on that with the idea that we also need to protect it? So I think when we look out 5 years, we're only going to see greater brand engagement across multiple categories and brands yet to be discovered. That's absolutely going to be, I think, with certainty where we're going to see, where we're already seeing things going. We're looking at location-based experiences. We're looking at all kinds of collaborations. On the other side of it, what's super exciting is we're seeing, you know, the advancements of technology to help and support brand protection and brand management. And I think about the work that you guys are doing and how that's evolved and where you guys were 5 years ago to where you are today in response to where the industry is going, where brands, where consumers are taking brands to, and how they want the assurances. Because ultimately, the consumer wants to know that the brand experience they have is authentic, it's true, it's real, it's what they're paying for, it's what they're buying into. And the better we're able to assure the consumer that what they're getting is the real deal, the better for everyone, ultimately. And that's where I see just positive opportunities around using technology in a way that we haven't fully exploited it. I do think that with companies like yourself, what I think we want to do is see much more integration within companies. I came from an IP owner. I would have liked to have seen much more integration internally for all the stakeholders to really understand how technology is a great tool, the way our phones are, our refrigerators. I mean, it's just that. It shouldn't be. It's not this kind of, you know, magical, mystical thing. It's really just a tool to better manage our businesses. And the more that we collaborate on what we need from that technology, the better we'll all be served by it. So I'm super excited for it. I think that things like ChatGPT are exciting. I think that it allows us to jumpstart a lot of our businesses. It's not a replacement by any means. I think if anyone's used it, you'll see that oftentimes the tone is wrong, the data is not correct. So it's not as if you can sort of walk away, you know, just do a paper and then it's done. I think there really needs to be a lot more involvement, in some cases, much more involvement. Sports Illustrated just recently was called out because it was determined that a lot of the articles have been written by ChatGPT and what that really meant. And so I think it's evolving, certainly, but it's not an end in itself. Again, it's another tool in our toolbox.
Without a doubt, you mentioned tools, technology, and that collaboration aspect being so important, right? All of it together. And lastly, for brands that are aiming to protect their IP rights going forward, what 3 pieces of actionable advice would you offer them?
Well, I think I'll limit it to 3. But first of all, I think you want to make sure that you own and you've registered your marks, whatever they are. That's where it all starts. And you'd be surprised, Randy, not everybody sort of understands it. And understand strategically where you want to take your brand to. What categories, as well as what territories. And those have significant financial impact and consequences. So you really want to think through from the very beginning what categories you want to be in and where you want to be geographically. So I would first start with great legal counsel and understand what those rights are. I would also, as another piece of it, so always, always, always make sure that you have great legal advice and legal counsel. I'd also really, again, depending on what your brand is and what product categories you're going into, I'd also want to make sure that I understand. I always say this to people, don't ever sign a contract if you don't understand the technology. And we saw this a lot with NFTs. A lot of folks thought they were going to miss the boat if they didn't get on that NFT, you know, boat and do an NFT, and they didn't really understand. So there's always going to be an opportunity. You don't need to be the first one out there. Understand, take time. That's my second piece of advice. Always understand what you're signing off for and what you're getting into and how you are going to be using your rights and where you're going to be taking those rights to it. Understanding your distribution channels, really understand the difference between the channels of trade. So what is a mass market retailer, a discounter, all those nuances and marketplaces and how the marketplaces work. So really understand, you know, what you're signing on for and ultimately what you're signing off on. That's a really, I think, an important piece. And then thirdly, I would say is reach out to folks like yourself, get informed, get educated, talk to us. Talk to, if you're in the toy industry, talk to the Toy Association, you know, talk to the Footwear Association, understand the nature of the business and ask questions and understand what the opportunities are around protecting your brand, not just protecting the brand itself, but also managing it, managing royalties. That's certainly an important part of it as well. All of those things, there's technology that can help you and aid you in that, but it really first starts with understanding what your rights are, what you own, and where you want to go with it. And then don't forget to have fun with it.
That's probably the best one. Yeah.
That's always
have fun with it. Enjoy it. No, those are solid pieces of advice. So yeah, for establishing your brand, knowing where you're going to go and understanding that e-commerce landscape, the distribution in the marketplaces and the collaboration aspect of it, because there are people out there that can help you.
Always ask questions. There's no dumb question.
Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate this time that we've had together, Maura. Unfortunately, it is all the time that we have. But before we end it, if our listeners would like to follow you or learn more about Licensing International, where could they go?
They can come see me. You know, I'm on LinkedIn. Obviously, don't hesitate to reach out. My email address is mregan@licensing.org, because I probably don't check LinkedIn as often as I should. So don't hesitate to reach out to me directly. We're based here in New York. We're in the Empire State Building. We're always here. I'm always here. I'm not on the road, but we're really accessible. We've got a great team here. We've also, for those of your listeners, or your viewers who are outside of the US, we also have great folks on the ground in the UK, Germany, Italy, France, the Nordics, Japan, China. We have board members from all over the world as well. We've got a lot. We've got a really deep bench of knowledge and understanding, and it's a communal industry. We want the industry to grow. So if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me. If I don't have the answer, I'll find someone who does, because I usually don't have the answer, but I know a lot of really smart people like you. So
you definitely do. And you guys are always wonderful. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on, sharing your insights, and for everything Licensing International is doing to support brands. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for thinking of us, and enjoy the holidays. And I'll see you in real life again soon.
I'm sure we will see each other soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks to our listeners for joining us. We'll see you on the next episode of the Future of IP Protection podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Future of IP Protection podcast, brought to you by Mark Vision. If you enjoyed today's show, please do us a favor and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you'd like to learn more about how Mark Vision can help you transform your IP protection strategy, visit us at markvision.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you on the next episode.